Can't Say That is a sociology podcast that poses more questions than answers. Join your hosts, Drs. Nama Carlin and Melanie White, in a journey to make the familiar unfamiliar.
Hi everyone, welcome to You Can't Say That, a sociological podcast that has more questions than answers. I'm Nama Carlin.
And I'm Melanie White.
Today, we're picking up some of the questions we introduced last time in our first episode. So if you missed that one, go back and have a listen because it really situates what we're doing in this season. As a brief recap, we're interested in the relationship between human and selfhood. What is the human self? What are its properties? What are its limits? What is it? What does being a self or having a self mean?
And in today's episode, we're going to be concentrating on a philosopher whose name is René Descartes. And you may be familiar with Descartes from the infamous I think, therefore I am. And certainly we're going to be thinking about that, but we're going to be considering specifically how his work helps us to approach the notion of the self from a sociological perspective.
So we have this correlation between philosophy and sociology because really we're committed to asking similar questions. We're curious about what being a self is, and that's something that Descartes is very curious about. Before we get into it, let's consider a brief biography of Descartes. This is something I like to do whenever I meet a new theorist, is get a bit of a background on who they are, kind of contextualize their own projects, where they're from, what motivates them. And I think this really helps us understand not only their views, but also their overall intellectual commitments. This is what I think, and something that I believe in, is that we tend to research and write the things that we're really implicated in and interested in. And so much of our biography informs the questions we ask and even the avenues we turn to find our answers. So in this podcast, whenever we consider a theorist, we'll just give a brief exposition on their background.
I think that that's a wonderful idea, and it seems very appropriate for an expression of the sociological imagination, thinking about that relationship between personal biography and the historical moment in which one's located. And some of our listeners might not be familiar with the sociological imagination. It was a text written by C. Wright Mills in 1959, if I remember correctly. And it has become a bit of a touchstone in terms of thinking about, well, what is sociology and what does it mean actually to do sociology? And so from that vantage, I think it's a good way to consider how we're going to approach a figure like Descartes, who is the father of modern philosophy, and being the father of modern philosophy, someone who initiates our thinking about what is the self and what is a modern self.
Descartes was a French philosopher and mathematician. He wrote at the first part of the 17th century. This was a key time in history. We saw many developments of natural sciences and philosophy. The philosophy part is very much due to Descartes, really, as you said, the father of modern philosophy. But there was also a 30-year war between Catholics and Protestants, and René Descartes was a Jesuit. So he had a very strong faith combined with a scientific mind, and that comes to inform his personal inquiries. He really provides this intellectual basis from which to break away from the prevailing philosophy of the time, which is scholasticism. And scholasticism basically says, I mean, this is the philosophical method that prevailed from the days of Aristotle. So, you know, Descartes kind of comes in the 17th century and really shakes things up. Mm. So scholasticism says that we're born with a clean slate.
Well, it means that in part, all of the knowledge that we acquire must derive from the senses or from experience. And so it is an accumulation of our sensory experiences, sight, smell, touch, hearing, that works to shape the knowledge that we can accumulate. And so with someone like Descartes, Meditations on First Philosophy, which was written in 1641, is an attempt to retrospectively record his dissatisfaction with this particular kind of approach to knowledge, which is wondering, well, how do we acquire knowledge? If scholastic principles are correct, then scholasticism would have it that we derive knowledge from our senses. But then how do we know something is true? What is the nature of our reality? And how are our experiences related to our bodies and our minds? And these are the basic questions that Descartes is really interested in as a philosopher, and as a philosopher who's interested in the project of ensuring a commitment to reality and to existence.
From Descartes' perspective, scholasticism is not a strong foundation for truth because our senses can deceive us. It's quite clear.
Well, that's right. Have you ever had the experience of, you know, driving, seeing those big open skies, and you're driving and you see a little figure in the distance? And if we were to trust our senses, we would think, wow, you know, that little figure is, lo and behold, 2 centimeters tall. But then as you draw closer, you realize, no, that little figure is actually 5 centimeters tall, and so forth, until you get to the point when one comes to a glorious moment when that figure is 175 centimeters tall, and you realize, my goodness, my senses have deceived me, because if I made a truth claim based on that particular object in the distance, I would have said, and if I were to rely on my senses, I would have said, hey, 2 centimeters or 5 centimeters. And consequently, Descartes' point is that that kind of knowledge claim isn't possibly true.
What does Descartes do? I mean, if we can't trust our senses, what is the next step?
What's interesting for him, and this is the approach that he takes in Meditations on First Philosophy, is he observes that, you know, he needs to actually reconcile his current self, the self or the knower, with his earlier opinions that he derived through his training and his childhood, etc.
Because that must be difficult as someone who is trained and grown up in this method as a philosopher, to kind of go, oh, hang on, something's not right.
Mm. And what's extraordinary about him is that he actually builds that kind of questioning into a basic method, a method of skepticism, or a radical doubt that permeates that text. And so that text is written as if it is taking the course of one day and then another day, and there are 7 meditations. But in fact, it took a year to be able to develop each meditation, so working and reworking the text. In the first meditation, he pauses and he says, you know, hey folks, you know, I've got this problem. I've come to realize I can't rely on my senses. And so what do I do? And because of that, he reckons that he needs to basically destroy everything that he has come to realize is has informed his sense of truth, and to return to basics, that is, to return to the foundations that shape and inform a more appropriate and necessary conception of knowledge is. And so he says something like, you know, we need to make a link to a building. And basically, once the foundations of a building are destroyed, anything built on them will also fall away by its own account. And by implication, what he's seeking to do is to develop an alternative foundation upon which a new edifice, the new edifice of modern philosophy and the self, can ultimately be built.
A foundation that cannot be falsified.
That's exactly right.
Truthful. Descartes, as a mathematician, as a scientist, is looking for a scientific basis on which to establish this foundational truth, this source of knowledge that can exist not just in the senses, but somewhere else, because our senses are the ones that, you know, can be questioned, can be doubted. What is the one truth, the one thing that I can know? What is the one thing that I cannot doubt?
And this this subject matter becomes the basis for the first two meditations. And the way he achieves this is through the method of radical doubt. And he is so fearful that his claims to knowledge might be based on opinion as opposed to evidence, on fabrication as opposed to something secure, that he imposes a scientific method, which is essentially a method of skepticism. And so he wants to show that if his opinions are false, he doesn't actually need to canvass every single opinion, like, I like chocolate cake, but I'm not so keen on butter cream icing, this sort of thing. You know, if you have to go through opinions so much, it's going to take forever. And he's a man with a mission. What he relies upon is a sense of reason that says, okay, well, you know what? We don't need to canvass everything like Melanie's appreciation of chocolate cake. We can just sort of carve out and throw away those opinions which are not completely certain, and if there's some degree of doubt associated with them, and this will help us, you know, basically Descartes, like many modern thinkers, time poor and time sensitive, to get to the heart of the matter faster.
Descartes starts with this assumption, because I need to doubt everything, there has to be actually something that is impossible for me to doubt, because otherwise, how is truth possible?
So Descartes takes as his starting point that question of, okay, so if I can't trust my senses, the question is, what do I know? What is most certain to me? And so there's this marvelous moment in the text where he says, you know, take for example, I'm sitting here in front of the fire wearing a winter dressing gown,
as opposed to my summer peignoir,
holding
a peignoir.
holding this piece of paper in my hands and so on.
But you can just imagine that moment of just sitting there, fire crackling.
Yes, well, and with your winter dressing gown on, and you look down at your hands, and Descartes says, how could it be denied that these hands or this whole body are mine? You know, because I'm here, I'm Melanie, sitting in this recording studio with Nama. Here I am.
How can we be so sure that this is a proper foundation for truth? Personally, Melanie, how do I know that you are sitting here with me? Maybe I am hallucinating. Maybe I am having a dream that we're in this recording studio together. You know, something we've talked about doing for so long. And maybe this is just a manifestation. How do I know that you are you?
If I'm understanding correctly, Nama, you're saying, Melanie, is this not just simply a product of your sensory hallucination?
Yeah, because I'm seeing. I mean, isn't it still reliance on sight?
Ah, yeah. So there is something about that, because I think you're right. You know, I could have had a little bit too much of a margarita last night. And
which
thought,
is your favorite.
I know, I love margaritas. I could have had one and been so completely gobsmacked that I'm not able to trust my senses. It could be that I'm dreaming. It could be, you know, that I'm subject to, Descartes has this lovely line, the vapors of alcohol or the vapors of melancholia. The question is then, can we rely upon this observation of sitting in front of the fire, or me, Melanie, sitting here in this recording studio? And Descartes introduces doubt. He says, what can be certain whether we are awake or asleep? Is there anything out there that can be? And you know what he settles on? He settles on grade one mathematics.
Oh, classic.
For whether I am awake or asleep, 2 and 3 added together are 5, and a square has no more than 4 sides. It seems impossible, then, from his perspective, that this should incur any suspicion of being false.
Okay, so we're getting into some idea of truth. So there is some truth that cannot be doubted, because regardless of whether I'm sleeping, regardless of whether we're here in the studio, 2 and 3 are five.
That's right. But then again, this is the form of radical doubt interceding. And this is the nature of his skepticism. How do I know that this is not just an assumption?
Oh, darn. I thought we were getting somewhere, but he's not. He's not happy with this answer. Okay.
No, because he says, you know, okay, well, you know, so we can think about mathematical truths, but if we're going to pursue the method, we need to think, okay, are they really beyond doubt? At the same time, by analogy, he can say, okay, well, you know, there is the opinion that there is an omnipotent God out there. And yet, what is the evidence for this? How do we know for certain? But this is too hot to handle. The question then becomes, well, who is deceiving me? How is this possible? What he ends up doing is reaffirming to himself that he needs to safeguard himself against deceit. What he decides to do is to say, okay, well, you know what? I can't really handle the hot potato question of, you know, is God deceiving me? But rather, I'm going to go in completely the opposite direction. I'm going to say, okay, I can't make claims about God being deceptive or evil or what have you. But what I can do is turn my will in completely opposite way and deceive myself. And I'm going to presume, it's sort of like a negative argument, I'm going to presume that for a time all of these opinions are completely and totally false, and I will do so until the weight of evidence shifts toward some kind of foundational truth. And I'm going to introduce an evil demon.
Whoa, that sounds exciting. Descartes assumes then that it isn't God who is actually the source, because if there has to be some source of truth in the world that and good, that would be God. And so therefore cannot be deceptive. There is this evil demon then, in his words, a malicious demon of the utmost power and cunning that has employed all their energies to deceive me. Descartes does this really interesting flip, because if he can't find a foundation for truth or for something that he can't dispute, then he flips the argument and says, well, if I can't know, the one thing I know is that I'm being deceived, and therefore there has to be something there that deceives me. So he can prove the fact that because his senses deceive him, he is constantly being deceived. That evil demon is there, and that's the evil demon's role.
And this becomes the point of departure for him. He, from there, says, okay, well, let's think about this deception in more detail. You know, if everything is deceptive, can this actually be held to be true? Does it now follow that I, too, don't exist?
Wow.
Because, you know, we're questioning whether or not our senses are so deceptive that we can no longer trust reality, does it now follow that I don't exist? And he says, well, you know what? If I convinced myself of something, then I certainly existed. And this becomes the cornerstone of the argument. Even though there's someone, a deceiver of a supreme power, who is deliberately and constantly deceiving me, I undoubtedly exist, he says, because if he's deceiving me and I let him deceive me as much as I can, quote, he will never bring it about that I am nothing so long as I think I am something. For Descartes there's the sense of thinking that I am something is the proof that there is a foundation that is inaccessible to that supreme deceiver, that evil demon who otherwise would be pointing in the direction of opinion and sensory deception.
So there is something there to be deceived, but what is it? What is this I? And that comes into our question of really, what is the self? Mm. And we really haven't, for Descartes, what we know is that it's not our senses, it's something else.
Grafted onto this, and this is, I think, the interesting part of the argument, Descartes introduces a kind of a dualism, because he wants to say, okay, well, this I is partly, you know, this body of mine, these hands, this face, And it's also my mind or my soul. And that mind or soul is what is capable of self-movement and thinking. The dualism of mind and body is presented as the basis of Descartes' sense of self. The foundation for his knowledge claim is, I am, I exist. But so long as I am thinking, so long as one is activating that kind of rational, intellectual, reason side.
Would you be a thinking being when you're asleep?
Well, I think that for Descartes, probably not, because I think thought involves a certain kind of reasoned, rational activity, and the stringency of his method is one of being able to forestall opinion and or forestall some kind of anything that has any element of a doubt, we can just throw that to the wayside. So the question of sleeping or dreaming or any of those sorts of things, I mean, arguably, Descartes would say, no, that isn't the affirmation of self there, because it's not that conscious, deliberate, methodical conception of reason being used to undermine any kind of opinion or sensory kind of truth.
Oh my gosh, so when I'm binge watching Netflix, do I actually exist for Descartes?
So it depends if you're thinking. That's the question. Are you thinking on Netflix, or is it just that sensory embodiment? And I think, you know, this is an important thing, because it seems to me that people often assume that Descartes is just sort of saying, oh, you know, let's not rely on the senses. But actually, it's not entirely true. We need the senses in order to live and to survive. It's just that the senses actually can't provide him, based on his method of radical doubt, can't provide him with the necessary foundation for truth.
He articulates this in this kind of aha moment. He says, thinking.
No, he doesn't say it like that. He says, aha, thinking.
At last I have discovered it. Thought. This alone is inseparable from me. I am, I exist, that is certain. But for how long? For as long as I am thinking. For it could be that were I totally to cease from thinking, I should totally cease to exist.
That happens to me when I watch Netflix. I completely cease to exist.
Do you?
I'm really not sure. I don't really watch Netflix all a lot, but, you know, I kind of pop in, pop out. So maybe pop into existence, out of existence. Who knows?
Yeah. Is this happening right now too? Are you popping in and out of existence here too?
This is a
practice in remaining very focused. So I exist to the full extent of existence right now.
And I am demonstrating popping in, popping out of reality.
Fantastic.
Well, this has been really interesting. And I'm just wondering, so we've been talking about a lot of different facets of Descartes' conception of self, but I'd like, Nama, for you to bring us home. How would you say the answer is to this question? Fill in the blank. Melanie, Descartes' conception of self is...
The answer would be to get an A, I would say like thought. You're able to, as a thinking being. But I think it's like doubt. You know, it's not so much I think, therefore I am, but it's I doubt, therefore I am. I'm constantly questioning. I think that's a foundational part of Descartes' work. So I don't know, the cogito, I think I am, I exist as long as I'm thinking, I would rephrase it. I am, I exist as long as I'm doubting. Because once I've stopped doubting and I've accepted the world for what it is, I've also accepted the deceptions of the senses, the deceptions of the evil demon. I've accepted.
So this is fascinating. So thinking is actually doubting. And
I think so.
Yeah, Descartes' innovation is to use that capacity for thought, this capacity for refusing to take things as they are and to doubt them, as an expression of a singular capacity for the self, and that it's only himself or myself that can exist
so long as I'm applying this rigorous method of doubting the foundations of existence, because then that proves oneself.
That's interesting. And I just had a question, I had a thought of like, how do I know that you exist? Because if I know that I exist, but I think we'll need to take that question up at a different time, because we've said enough for one day, don't you think?
Oh, I think so, but that's a fascinating one. We'll definitely take that up. Thank you all for listening. Follow us on Twitter at You Can't Say That. And we'll hope you'll join us next time when we take up the sociologist Emile Durkheim. Thanks very much for listening. Bye.
You Can't Say That is a Carlin White collaboration. Our logo was designed by Francesca Rimi Cheng. Stephen Hunt did our theme song. Chris Jofuedes is the warm glow of fire crackling in the fireplace. Until next time, thanks for joining us.